I'm excited to announce the first series on the show. The series will dive into fertility through episodes featuring experts in the field, including genetic counselors, filmmakers, and people's personal path to parenthood through IVF. Sponsoring the series is Let's Get Checked. They offer home testing kits for sexual health, men's health, women's health, and general wellness. A kit gets sent discreetly to your place. You collect a sample, send it back in the mail, and your results are available through the website. You even receive a call from a nurse to go through your results. I did their female fertility test kit to help me understand my hormonal health. For 20% off your own kit, use code DNA Today at checkout. Again, that's letsgetchecked.com with code DNA Today for 20% off your kits.
How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you. We're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Hello, you are listening to DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. On this show, I explore genetics' impact on our health through conversations with leaders in genetics. These are genetic counselors, like on today's episode, researchers, doctors, patient advocates, and many more voices in genetics. My guests today are from DNA Ally. Nargold Faravashi is the co-founder of DNA Ally with a background in genetics and business with over 20 years of experience in launching clinical products for genomic companies and an extensive background in business and marketing. Kristen Coffeen has been a licensed certified genetic counselor for almost 20 years. She has a background in cancer and prenatal genetic counseling in the clinical setting, as well as extensive industry background in medical affairs, and is a member of DNA Ally's Board of Advisors. Nargold and Kristen, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm really excited to be launching into our discussion about DTCs today, direct consumer genetic testing.
Wonderful. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So to set the scene for people, by the end of 2020, roughly 100 million people will have taken an at-home DNA test, according to the MIT Technology Review. To put that into perspective, that's more than the combined populations of Texas, California, and Florida. What are some considerations people should take before sending their sample to a direct consumer genetic testing company? What should they think about? Sometimes I say, think before you spit. What are those thoughts that they should be considering?
Sure. And, you know, starting off, consumers need to understand that the information from a genetic test may be used to deny individuals life and health insurance. It's unclear right now whether genetic information, including the results of direct-to-consumer genetic testing, will become a standard part of the risk assessment that insurance companies undertake when making coverage decisions. That's a key point for consumers to know. This is really the challenges of legal protection against genetic discrimination. So that's one of the key points around the privacy that I wanted to bring up. The next one is really the difference between the screening or diagnostic testing. You can achieve different accuracy based on getting a screening or a diagnostic test. Screening tests usually have limited variants with a lower cost in most cases, versus the diagnostic panel has more comprehensive coverage in terms of variants in genes, and there's a higher cost associated with that, and sometimes the consumers wouldn't know that. So those are a couple of the points I wanted to bring up, and Kristen can take a deeper dive into some of the other issues.
Yeah, thank you, Nargold. I think Kira, you said it really beautifully, think before you spit. I really like that. And putting my genetic counseling hat on in general, as genetic counselors, we always like to remind people that they should really think about why they want the test that they're getting and what type of information are they looking for. And really the implications of getting that genetic test, whether it's for ancestry or health information in the cases of DTC, because you can get both in often situations. And a unique thing about a genetic test is it's not just about the individual who's getting that test, but because it is genetic, we're looking at DNA, it really is about a person's personal ecosystem, what to do with unexpected ancestry results, impact on family relationships given certain ancestry results. Sometimes cases of non-paternity have been found, or finding out unexpected things in your family history that were not known. And then from the health information side, really, what do you do with those positive quote unquote positive and negative health information results, an understanding of what is being tested. So as Nargul was speaking about the different types of panels that are out there, what it means to have a quote unquote positive and negative result, what's the performance of that test, what type of follow-up testing and or health evaluations may be needed based on that result, should confirmatory testing be done, and what is the impact to my family members?
There's a lot of concepts that we're covering here, and I think one of the most important kind of as a baseline is understanding that screening versus diagnostic. And I think that is such a key concept in genetics that a lot of people don't get. And that screening is like, all right, we're going to kind of have this first line testing. And then diagnostic is like, do you have this or not? So screening is very much about risk levels and like, okay, are you at high risk or low risk for something? And then when you're going on to that diagnostic part, it's like, do you have this or do you not have this? And so I think that's something that it's kind of confusing in the DTC world, direct consumer testing. I'm going to keep saying that. I hope people get what I mean. So being able to really tease out what all of this means can be confusing. I think one aspect that I find myself explaining to people is like the comprehensiveness of these tests, which you're also touching on. And a lot of people will bring up 23andMe testing for BRCA. And people are like, oh, I got tested for them. You know, I'm negative. But what people don't understand is that for them, through 23andMe, they're only testing for three variants. Now, these three variants are very, they're like founder mutations. When we see this in the Ashkenazi Jewish population more than others, but it's only three variants out of about 1,000. So they're the most common ones, but you could have something else where you think it's a negative, but then it's not very comprehensive. I don't know if you guys, Kristen wanted to talk more about, you know, how these genes are even related to breast cancer and give more background on that.
Yeah, and you bring up a really, really good point that is really important for people to understand. And it goes back to what we were just talking about and nicely illustrates the point. Understanding of the test itself, why you want to get tested, what's the purpose of it, and that whole screening versus diagnostic. And, you know, just as a general background, you bring up BRCA1 and 2. They are two types of genes that are associated with an increased risk for breast cancer and other types of cancer, which is an important point for people to think about. And an important concept just to keep in mind in general is, you know, when we talk about looking at variants in genes, our genes themselves contain their own unique spelling, so to speak, which determines how that gene functions in the body. And when there is this misspelling in a gene, which we call a variant in genetics, it impacts the function of that gene. So in the case of variants in BRCA1 or BRCA2, so they are two different genes, which people need to keep in mind as well when they say they've had BRCA testing. It is two different genes. So variants in those genes can lead to an increased lifetime risk for specific types of cancer, including breast cancer, but it's not the only one. And the three most common variants in BRCA1 and BRCA2 that testing is performed in, for example, at 23andMe and some other DTC companies, are actually found, as you pointed out, in individuals of Ashkenazi Jewish or Eastern European Jewish descent. And so for an individual who is not Ashkenazi Jewish, but who has a significant personal and or family history suspicious for a variant in either BRCA1 or 2, testing, quote unquote, negative for these variants or the lab not finding these variants in you would not be helpful in that situation. And so I think people need to realize that there could still be and have a significant variant elsewhere in either of these genes that could lead to an increased risk. So really, in somebody who is not Eastern European Jewish but has that suspicious significant personal and or family history, it can give someone and their family members a false sense of reassurance. And so that's why it's really important to ask yourself, why are you getting tested? Is there a history that's significant there that you want to delve more into? What do you hope to find out and the associated implications? And people really need to understand what is actually being tested by the labs in relationship to their own personal situation. It's not a one-size-fits-all in genetics. And these tests, as was discussed earlier, the screening types of panels versus a more comprehensive diagnostic test.
I think another good one to highlight, because oftentimes people are talking about BRCA testing when we're talking about these concepts, but to fan out a little bit, another condition is Alzheimer's disease. And so this is something that's included on DTC, testing as well. And we see that this isn't a straightforward really result why is this, like, how does this work? Why is it not a straightforward result, Kristen?
You know, you bring up a really good question, Kara. And, you know, like what we've talked about, it all ties into understanding the why are you getting tested and what do you hope to find out. And one of the things about Alzheimer's disease that's important for people to realize, and some people don't know, there are actually two types. There is an early onset form of Alzheimer's and late onset. And for the early onset form of the disease, it can be inherited in a certain percentage of cases. So in genetics, when we're looking at family histories of individuals and we see lots of people in a family who are affected with a condition at young ages, that makes a genetics professional very suspicious that there may be something, quote unquote, inherited going on in this family. And that's what we see with those early onset forms. So in those cases, a variant in a particular gene associated with this condition would have been inherited from a biological parent. And we know some of the genes associated with those early onset forms. However, DTC companies do not test for the genes associated with those early onset forms. They're actually testing for what we call a risk modifier gene, which is called APOE. And this is associated with the late onset form of Alzheimer's. And so if you're getting testing done, you go back to that understanding why you're getting tested, because you have multiple family members who are affected with Alzheimer's at young ages, and you go to a DTC company and your APOE testing is negative, you may not have been tested for the right thing based on your personal and or family history. So, or if you test positive, on the flip side, the results from APOE are not straightforward because it really is a risk modifying gene. So there's certain number of variants in those genes that modifies a person's risks accordingly, but that assessment of that risk modification is not completely straightforward. We know that there is an associated risk and it can modify something accordingly, but we don't know the other factors that also impact that risk in the example of APOE in that late onset form. So again, going back to why are you getting tested and what do you hope to find out and what is that personal and family history that you're looking at? Or if you have no history at all and just like, this is cool, I want to get testing done for this, and understanding what a positive APOE result may mean, that it doesn't mean somebody's going to be affected with Alzheimer's disease. It really is a risk modifier, and having a conversation with somebody who understands that result.
And it's so similar in that sense, APOE compared to BRCA, because they're both increasing your risk for developing this condition, but it is not saying you will. And I think that's exactly something that people don't get. And for Alzheimer's, it's even kind of more confusing and more complex, because there are genes where we can say, okay, this is even like more so. And it's like, you know, kind of in that murky area between screening and diagnostic when you're looking at those genes you were talking about that can be kind of inherited through families, and we can see, okay, this is probably the cause of this condition. And so it's, genetics is not straightforward, I mean, overall. And so, you know, we try to make sense of things as we go, and explaining it. It's one thing to understand it and then to explain it. And kind of spanning out into the prenatal area, a lot of prospective or expecting parents are doing carrier testing. This is becoming, you know, very standardized in the field of, if you are expecting, you end up seeing a genetic counselor, they're offering carrier testing, or your OB is. So oftentimes they're getting this carrier testing offered, and they're looking to see if a couple, or if they're using a donor, whatever the situation is, that they have genetic variants that if the child inherits one from each biological parent, that that child could then be affected by a condition. So one of the things is cystic fibrosis. This is a really big one. This is kind of in that four core that are considered in carrier testing. What should people think about when they're looking at being tested for a carrier status for cystic fibrosis or other conditions like it?
You know, you bring up a really good point there, Kira. And when we're talking about things like BRCA and APOE, it's, you know, are you at risk to develop that condition? Carrier testing is a little bit different. As you mentioned, it's, you typically need two biological parents who are carriers of a condition for a child and to have a risk to be affected in most situations. And with conditions like cystic fibrosis, it all, and I know this is a common theme that I keep going back to, but really that goes back to that understanding, why are you getting tested and what you hope to find out. And oftentimes in prenatal, there's not a lot of time to have those conversations with the healthcare provider who's doing that testing for you. It really has become more, I don't even know if this is the right word, routinized, where it's, oh, you're gonna get your blood drawn for a bunch of stuff, let's do this. And you really need to understand what is being tested in relationship to your situation. So as in that example with BRCA1 and 2, where they looking at certain variants, that's oftentimes the way carrier testing is done. So for example, with cystic fibrosis, different labs, whether it's a DTC lab or other types of labs out there, have a panel of variants that they're typically looking at related to a condition to see if somebody is a quote unquote carrier for that condition. And just because somebody may test negative for the variants in those panel, meaning they don't see them, it doesn't mean they're not a carrier. There still is a remaining risk for a residual risk for somebody to be a carrier. So that's an important conversation to have that, you know, yes, that's great. Your carrier testing looks wonderful, but there is still this remaining risk to be that carrier. And for some people, if they have a family history of this condition, it's really important to understand what variants are being looked at in that condition. Do they match up to the variants that actually exist in your family? And if they don't, you're not removing that risk to be a carrier. So it all goes back to that, you know, what are on these panels, what's being tested, and understanding truly what that positive and negative means. And then in the case of a carrier test, if a person is found to be a carrier, what type of testing is available for their partner? Because as we talked about, both the biological parents would need to be carriers. And what type of testing is available? What's the detection rate of that testing? How far does it reduce your chances to have an affected child if that partner is found to be negative? And then if both biological parents are found to be carriers, you know, is there prenatal testing available? So it goes down a whole other pipeline of things. Do they want prenatal testing? What would they do with that information if they had it? So forth and so on. So it's for in this situation, it's understanding the test and what variants are actually being tested in relationship to your situation, and then the downstream things to think about for the pregnancy itself and what you would do with that information.
And you explained it really well of having these, when we're doing this testing with carrier testing, it's not often that we're looking at the whole gene. So we're not like sequencing the whole gene. We're picking little points to say, oh, let's check here, let's check here, let's check here. And so you do want to see, oh, are they only checking a couple spots or are they checking a lot of spots? And so you're kind of saying, okay, how accurate is this testing? Or maybe accurate is not the right word, but how comprehensive is this testing to say, are we really looking at as much as we can? And so that's something that's like you start, you know, in the prenatal setting, you start comparing, okay, well, this partner had this going on and we looked at this. Now we got to make sure we've looked at it in the other partner. And it does become a matching game as you're going.
I think another important point about cystic fibrosis, you know, we touched on it with BRCA1 and 2 testing about thinking about also your ethnicity. And cystic fibrosis is a condition that is most common in the Caucasian population. So we know a lot about the variants in that population because it's the most studied population. But if somebody is not Caucasian, again, it's going back to, you know, are you getting the right panel for your testing as well? So incorporating that understanding of your ethnicity piece as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And just knowing, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, as genetic counselors, we will ask, oh, like, what countries are you from? Like, what is your ethnicity? Because we're getting more information from that. Because sometimes patients are like, why are you asking me this? And I'm like, I promise, it makes sense. There's a reason.
It makes sense for the purpose.
You're right, exactly. Another point that you brought up that I thought was interesting was talking about kind of routine testing. And with genetic testing becoming more affordable than ever, what are some of the reasons that genetic testing like isn't at that point of becoming standard, that everyone isn't getting, like, say, when we were talking about carrier screening, you know, there's four conditions that is pretty standard at this point. But then some people are looking at, say, almost 200 conditions compared to the four. So, you know, Nargo, you can jump in here of, you know, what your thoughts are of why we haven't gotten to a point of it becoming standardized.
Sure. There are different factors contributing to that. Starting off, doctors having limited expertise in genetics. That's one of the key issues. Lack of genetic counselors. As many of us know, there is limited number of genetic counselors in U.S. And then lastly, you know, one of the other key issues is the workflow issues. And by workflow, I'm referring to successful integration of genomics into healthcare data management. what is the change in care in terms of management of that patient. A lot of these workflow implementations are not in place right now when you talk to physicians. And lastly, insurance not paying for the genetic test. These are some of the key issues impacting the uptake of genetics as part of the routine testing.
And one question that gets thrown around in all of these topics are the level of understanding that general practitioners and other healthcare providers outside of genetic counselors and geneticists, how much they really understand first off, and then how much they're able to explain this to patients. I mean, do you know of how much training people outside of genetic experts really get in terms of their education? Like, how prepared are they to be dealing with all this? I mean, we're just hitting some topics today. Like, we could go on for hours about how complex all this is and all the considerations.
Yeah, a study last year in Health Affairs found primary care doctors are optimistic about genetic testing, but they aren't confident about their ability to discuss genetic testing or even offer guidance to their patients. We know that genomics is a constantly evolving field with 75,000 DNA tests in the market and another 10 coming onto the market on a daily basis. It's impossible for primary care physicians to keep up with the genetic industry. Even us in genetics, it's hard to keep up with 75,000 tests. I was reviewing a 5-day continuing education program offered by Harvard for primary care physician. The topic of genetics was actually offered on the last day and on the last hour of a week-long course. We know that most people skip the last day, let alone the last hour of the conference.
Yeah.
There's definitely a significant knowledge gap for physicians in genetics.
And that ends up really falling on genetic counselors and geneticists to say, okay, well, we've got to cover all of this. We have to be able to meet with so many patients and clients in some areas and be able to be processing all of this. I mean, genetic counselors are getting inundated with people wanting to book appointments, and specifically now for all this direct consumer testing, because it's not just people coming in, okay, I want medical grade testing. And now people are like, I've done this on my own. Can you talk to me about this? How is DNA Ally attempting to address this issue of this really high demand for genetic counselors?
Sure. At DNA Ally, we provide flexibility for genetic counselors to work when they want from the comfort of their home. We have minimum requirements for availability on a weekly basis, and we gather that information from the genetic counselors. It's more of an Uber on-demand model where we are matching the consumer to the genetic counselor based on both of their availability. So it's a very, very different model than anything else that's out there. Consumers can download the DNA Ally app, and in less than 2 minutes, they can get connected to a certified genetic counselor to review their results.
And so this is really, I mean, telehealth has become such a booming area in the last few years and really kind of changing the field in terms of availability of people being able to talk to a genetic counselor and that quickly. I mean, 2 minutes, that's crazy. It's just like how Uber works. I'm like, oh, they're coming in 1 minute. They're coming down the street here. So it's interesting that, you know, not only is it like, oh, I don't have to make an appointment, go all the way there, but in some states in the U.S. and obviously areas of Canada too, are really remote and they have a few genetic counselors. Last I checked, Wyoming, Vermont, Mississippi, each have fewer than 5 genetic counselors for the entire state. And some of these are big states. So telehealth is really able to combat that and say, okay, people that normally wouldn't be able to even talk to a genetic counselor now have access to so many through, you know, companies like DNA Ally. How does it work? Is it phone, video, both?
Yeah, we basically, that's one of the key issues. And, you know, being able to implement this Uber model mitigates some of what you highlighted. We offer nationwide coverage, including coverage in the specific states that have only a few genetic counselors. As mentioned previously, it's an Uber model. It's on-demand model of genetic counseling. The consults are done via phone or video. The consumer could choose the option that works best for them. And it's all done through our HIPAA-compliant platform.
That was going to be my next question. It's like online, so how is it secure? And it's good to know you have a platform that's setting that up. And a lot of hospital systems and are looking towards that as well, of implementing that into their process. And especially for people that are not like as mobile as others and just not able to get places. I mean, this is really changing so much, you know, in the field and just healthcare in general of having so many of these appointments. So we talked about having genetic counselors being inundated with people having these results. They can't, they're just managing the patients they have during the day. But for genetic counselors that may be newer to the field, and they're looking for new career opportunities, something fun to do that's kind of separate from their everyday job, how can they join DNA Ally? What are the requirements and like the process to be able to apply and join the team?
Yes, the process is very simple. The genetic counselor needs to be certified. We have our own training program to train on direct-to-consumer consults. You go to our website at www.dnaally.com. You apply online and provide estimates of your availability on a weekly basis. And then we will contact you for an interview and go through the onboarding process.
Well, it sounds exciting for people to be able to become more involved. And I think DTCs are such a growing area. And I think that's one of the most interesting concepts that, you know, as genetic counselors, we talk about with the public. So I think it's a cool area where, you know, if you are at a family function, you're at a party and you say you work in genetics, that's going to be their next question. They're going to be asking about DTCs. I think we've all, you know, felt that, you know, over these past few years. So it's really cool that you're able to focus in on DNA Ally, really just focusing on these direct consumers and be able to streamline that as opposed to what the other telehealth companies are offering, that you're really, really have a focus.
Thank you. Yes. So we definitely saw that as a unmet need, and there is a significant gap there, and there is so many consumers, as you mentioned, that are confused and they don't quite know where to go. And this Uber model allows the genetic counselors to pick the time they're available and get connected to a patient and really help them understand what it is they need to do and what the next steps are. So we're super excited.
You're like the matchmaker between counselors and patients' clients. I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and just being able to explore a lot of these concepts and ideas, because I think these were some of kind of misconceptions in the field that we were able to clear up for people, and so that they have a better understanding. And especially for people that are like, all right, I want to do a DTC, but should I? And kind of thinking it all through. And so hopefully we were able to help people's thought process and decision making. So thank you both for coming on the show and sharing all this with me.
Great. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Learn more about DNA Ally by going to their website, simplednaally.com. If you are booking a session while you're there, you can use promo code DNA Today to receive a discount. Again, that's dnaally.com with code DNA Today for a discount. I want to wish everybody good luck who is in the interview season for genetic counseling schools. I was right there a couple years ago. If you are looking for interview advice, you can go back to episode 97 of this show. I was joined by three other girls who are at the same level of me, same class, but we're all in different programs. So we had a lot of different experiences during our interviews. So you can hear our advice on there, episode 97, about interview advice, ranking, matching, kind of the whole second part of the application process. And if you're interviewing at Sarah Lawrence, I hope we cross paths. I'll be around. So feel free to send me an email if you wanted to connect beforehand. That's at info@dnapodcast.com. You can send me any questions, comments, concerns you have about the show. info@dnapodcast.com. And by now, you all know dnapodcast.com has all this information and more from today's episode, all the 100 plus other episodes. They're all on their website, dnapodcast.com. And if you are interested in following on social media, I'm on Twitter at dnapodcast, Instagram at dnaradio. That one's a little different. And really appreciate if you could take a moment out of your busy schedule and rate and review the podcast on whatever podcast player you're listening on, a special Apple if you are one of the iPhone users like me. Please rate and review. It really allows the show to grow, have new listeners find us, and be able to connect with much more of you and grow our community here. Look forward to the Fertility Series launching in April to coincide with Infertility Awareness Week, which is April 23rd to 29th. I'll be speaking with voices in fertility to explore topics like personal journeys, IVF, conceiving via a donor, media portrayal, genetic counseling, and fertility testing. Sponsoring the series is Let's Get Checked with their at-home testing kits. They have many fertility tests for anyone who is curious about their fertility status. If you're starting a family or thinking about pregnancy down the line, this could be helpful. Submitting a sample provides a broad picture of women and men's hormonal health. A kit gets sent directly to you. You provide a sample, drop it back in the mail, and receive your results in, get this, only 2 to 5 days. Here's how this home test goes beyond others. Physicians and nurses actually call you on the phone to explain your results. You don't just get a report, you actually get to talk to a healthcare provider. They're going to talk to you about the biomarkers looked at, including the follicle stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone for women. Try for yourself by going to letsgetchecked.com and use code DNA today for 20% off your kits. Again, that's letsgetchecked.com with code DNA today for 20% off your kits. Thanks for listening, and join me next time to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.